This is a View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Wednesday, the 2nd of November, 2016. My name is Patrick Smith. And you know that when I do like a quick intro or one without the sort of music to begin with, you know that it's either a case of the show's a little bit too long or I just want to get it done quick and get myself to bed. So a mixture of the two, but we've got a hell of a show because there's so much to talk about. I'm just looking through the agenda here. We've got the weekend's games, and that's a show in itself, let's be fair. We've got the player of the month, your three-word weekends. We have an interview with Mike Quinnell, defenseman for the Belfast Giants. And in the around the league section, well, we talk everything from Dops to inflatable bears to Tyler Mosienko and then some. Before we ask Neil Russell to sing us his favourite Justin Bieber song. I'm not joking, so it's well worth sticking about for. We look at the Friendship Four. We preview the first of our four teams there in the University of Vermont. We answer your TFAs. And of course, we finish off by talking about the weekend's forthcoming games. So one bumper episode. If you want to get in contact with us at AVFTB on Twitter is probably the best way. We've got Facebook as well. Podcast at kingdomofthegiants.com is our email. There's still no email sent in. Somebody send us an email. I don't care what it says. Just send us an email, please. And soundcloud.com/AVFTB is where you'll get all of our sort of post-game interviews and the likes. Like I say, one bumper show, some brilliant stuff in there. Davey and Sizz in just a moment to talk about the games. So let's get cracking. If you hear me eating away in the background, that's because we have a big box of celebrations left over from Halloween that nobody came to take, so I'm just going to eat them while I do this podcast. A lot to talk about over the last week or so, not just to the Belfast Giants, but right across the league. I've got Mr. McGimsey joining us. How are you?
G'day, g'day.
And also join us from Belfast Giants TV, the main man, the white Barry White, Mr. Simon Kitchen.
I'm good, Pat. How are you, mate?
Not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Like I say, hell of a lot to talk about, not just this weekend, but, you know, we've got the player of the month to talk about. We have an interview with Mike Quinnell. We'll look around the league, and believe me, that could be the biggest section of the whole podcast, considering what's been going on this week. A bit of a chat about the Friendship Four, TFAs, and the weekend preview of the two away games to the Blaze and the Panthers. But as always, we start with the weekend games for the Belfast Giants, and on Saturday, the Clan visited the SSE Arena, but walked away with a 3-2 defeat. The Giants' goals coming from Chris Higgins and Jonathan Boxall in the first period, before Craig Peacock and Scotty Pitt levelled it at 2-2 before that period was even out. Those goals were only 90 seconds apart. But it fell to James Demarai to score the game-winning goal in the second period, and the Giants walked away with the 2 points. Jackson Whistle started in goal for the Belfast Giants, well, Gary Russell started in goal for the Clan with Zeke, their number one netminder, still retaining an injury. Sizz, you were covering this for Belfast Giants TV. A toil for the Belfast Giants. A win's a win, but there was no real edge to the game.
It started off really well. You know, when two goals up, as you say, you know, Higgy and Boxy basically scored the two goals. There was that goal disallowed, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Which really would have given us control of the game, but I thought it turned when we had the 5-on-3, and really give Bray Head confidence, because they did a great job. We just did not get it. I think we had one shot on target out of six, the rest over the crossbar or went wide the net, and the power play is really struggling at the minute, but overall, you know, you're 100% right. It was a bit of a toil, you know, 2-0 up, getting it back to 2-2 at the end of the first period. And then we found a way of getting it done. We managed to get the third goal and keep them out of the Whistle's net for the rest of the game. But It was a real struggle, and the most important thing is the 2 points.
You say that shooting, you know, we're off target. That's something we talked about all through the season last year, the fact that the guys were letting off shots but not hitting the target. I think at one point in the power play, we were a 5-on-3? We had 3-4 shots on net, and only like one of those was on target. How do you change that? Is that just training? Is that just part of the game? Or I don't understand how these guys can be shooting so high and wide.
Well, Paddy, it's sometimes good defense.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you have, you know, they're not your first choice netminder in. When you have the British netminder in, which is Gary Russell in this case.
Yes.
Don't forget, Gary Russell came to Belfast last year and won for Brayhead, when we were all expecting a 2 points for the Giants. But for Gary Russell to play the way he played, and he played very well, but on top of that, the defense, you know, when you're playing that game, that you basically need to be tighter. You need to be, you know, keep your, everybody else needs to basically chip in, get back when you have to get back and cover your wingers. And they, Brayhead played a good road game. They really did. They've struggled this season, you know, the fits and starts, but they came into the SSA arena late. You know, there was something, the ferry was, running a little bit late, I believe, and, you know, they came in late as well and didn't really get the bus legs going for the first 14, 15 minutes. But when they did, they looked as if they could play. There's some good players in that team. They were led by Scotty Pitt, who scored a really good goal, and I'd say just give them momentum, and momentum is a massive, massive thing in this sport.
Jackson Whistles had 22 shots on, but 20 saves. Gary Russell had 30 shots on and 27 saves. Davey, a few people after that game, and as it is, you know, even though it was a win, a few people are actually calling for maybe more passion from the Belfast Giants. What does that mean? Does that mean a couple of fights? What does that mean? If you were shouting for more passion, what do you think these guys want?
I suppose that the thing that's been mentioned most on certainly on the Twitter feed is the lack of a Darrell Lloyd type figure in our team this year, leading the charge whenever the game needs maybe a bit of momentum change with a big hit. Not so much a fight, Paddy, in my opinion. I think tempo's a big thing for us. You know,
yes.
we play in fits and starts, and our different lines play at really, really different tempos, you know, and that's just because of the makeup of the lines, you know. With some lines that go flat out, with some lines that are, as you will have on every team every season, but we just lack that. We don't have that spark line. I know Boxy will get in there and Toy and all, they'll go in and they'll do the hitting and they'll do the grinding, but we don't have that, you know, wham bam line of the Garside, Keith and Lloyd. It's just not there anywhere. We're recruited a different way this season. So maybe passion, is that what they're looking for? More big hits, more, you know, I don't necessarily think that game on Saturday night required a fight. You know, we've talked about the players that we have on our team that are more than capable of doing it if required. I just don't think that was required, but maybe the big momentum change and hit. And for me, pace, we have a team allegedly full of speed, and we're not, and those players individually are maybe bringing speed, but as lines, and as I say, just, and I think there's just a lack of tempo in our game. That blue collar game that we've been brought up on in Belfast isn't there at the minute. You know, that wham bam sort of, take it to the other team. As coach would say, you know, best foot forward and all that there. It's just not happening at the minute. We're just not putting, you know, the cliche again of getting that 60-minute game together. We need to start putting half a period, you know, together. We're just lacking a bit of cohesion.
Yeah. And since you mentioned it there in regards to the disallowed goal to place in the first period, Jonathan Boxall thinking he'd hit the back of the net after Ash Foster had driven the net and looked like to pull a good move before it was not tapped in. Tom Darnell waved it off. We did put in hashtag I'm the ref. Dave, you stuck that video up there and asked for people's thoughts. And we had likes of Stephen Murray, Chris Bell, you know, Peter Clough, all saying it was a goal all day long. But some guy called Tom Darnell, don't know who he is, but he's got in touch and said that after driving the net permitted, the forward makes contact with the netminder in the crease as follow-up shot was coming in. So basically of touching the pads. Says you were the one both on the webcast and on Twitter and likes asking Tom Darnell to make a comment. He did come in to make a comment. Did you agree with him?
Do you know what? I watched it over and over and over again on Saturday night. Shane and myself watched at the end of the first period. We couldn't see what was going wrong. We just couldn't see that it was a disallowed goal. When we got the opportunity, when Davey put that clip up earlier on, I, you know, tagged in Darns myself, and fair play to him. He stepped up again and he explained his decision. And if that's the case, you know, he did mention on there that it was, you might not have seen it from the camera angle, but he did interfere with the leg of the goalie. If that's the case, you've got to stand back and go right for enough. And luckily it didn't cost us. But, you know, he was much closer to the play. He didn't hesitate to rule the goal out. Didn't hesitate. His arms were straight up. Literally, as soon as the whistle was blown, his arms were straight up in the air, and basically waving the goal off itself. So you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. But again, luckily, on that occasion, it didn't cost us.
Davey also says, on second view, you may have considered giving a penalty to the D-man for the hit on Foster, which sort of came in straight after the puck crossed the line.
Yeah, it was a bit of a naughty hit, but, you know, on reflection, even the ref said himself, probably should have been a couple of minutes in the penalty box. Chance maybe didn't get the goal, but should have maybe been going onto the power play. But, you know, it's one of those things. It wasn't given. You suck it up. But that little I'm the ref thing isn't to try and undermine referees. It's just to spark a bit of debate. And,
absolutely.
You know, we've taken a bit of stick behind the scenes from, I've got a few WhatsApps and stuff today from people saying, you know, we shouldn't be doing this, but it's just to spark debate. It's an incident and you can see how many different opinions. And as Sizz has said there, the best angle of anyone, credit to the referee for his positioning. You know, we have watched it on super slow-mo, double speed, and we can't see that contact. But he's there, so you have to give him the benefit of the doubt that he has seen it. And under the rules, if the player makes contact with the goalie in the crease, it should have been a minor penalty according to the rules, but that's neither here nor there. But, you know, the goal was washed out. We managed to get another goal and win the game.
You mentioned the power play there. I'm going to have to bring it up. We've had a few three-word weekends, from not least from the likes of Shannon Wright, Keelan Deeney, and big Belfast Giants fan Garrett Walters, all bemoaning the status of the Belfast Giants power play. We were 0-5 on Saturday. We were 0-3 on Sunday. Over the last four games, it's been 0-18. And over the last 10 games, two goals and 36 power plays. That's a 5.6% return, Davey. That's abysmal.
Well put. We had a power play a number of weeks ago that we discussed. And I think Aaron, it was on the podcast that week, said, you know, if this is the blueprint, you want to clip that video and play it at practice and say, just replicate that. It was full of movement. It was full of shots. It was full of screening the goaltender, getting people in the right places to take shots. It's been a bit static. It looks like a power play. It's lacking confidence. There's a lot of high wide shots, as you've already said. You know, luckily enough, on the flip side, that the penalty kill's been pretty tight lately.
Yeah.
But power play is just something that's just going to have to be continually worked on, because they have to get it right. It's at the minute, I think we're 94-95% combined penalty kill and power play, and it's just not good enough. We need another 10 or 15% out of these guys.
Says, you know, as I say, two goals from 36 power plays. What do you think's wrong there?
They're not scoring goals. Look at it. I mean, it's again, you know, I've been lucky enough to be at practice when they're training and they're playing against, you know, three or four guys on checking out their power play. You know, it's looking good, and Shane Johnson brings it up regularly, especially in the last couple of games, because we haven't been scoring. It's about the movement, and we're very static. It's okay, you're getting the puck, you know, from into your tape from the blue line or from behind the net, or, you know, you're just like a touch pass to basically try and create a bit of space, but nobody's moving into that space. And I know exactly what Aaron was talking about when he said about making that power play the blueprint. It was against Brayhead on the 8th of October, because I watched it today, and it just, the power play that we have at the minute isn't working. And for whatever reason, do you know what? Somebody's going to get hammered about it someday. We're going to put three or four power play goals past someone, and then you're just going to go, well, do you know what? It is working. But it's, for whatever reason, Derek Walzer, and he's got the guys playing a certain way on the PP, but we just cannot take our chances. And it's going to, I mean, it really, if we had took our chances on Sunday night against Cardiff, you know, it could have been a different result as well. But for whatever reason, and I honestly don't know what the problem is, because we have quality players, but we're just not scoring at the moment.
Yeah, they say we've had a few people coming in on the three-word weekends, mentioning James Trotman need to fix special teams. I think it's just something we have to work on. It's hopefully something that will change in the games to come. We'll move on to Sunday's game now, Bill. But before that, if you want to see the highlights of this win over the Brayhead Clan, of course, you can go to our good friends at Belfast Giants TV on their YouTube and on the Belfast Giants website. Sunday night, we travel to Ice Arena Wales to take on the Cardiff Devils, who are on a rich vein of form at the moment, and that unfortunately continued against the Giants, winning 5-2 against us on the road. The Giants goals both came from Foster and Vandermeer, both in the second period, but the Devils goals, there was a real glut of periods goals in that second period. Brian Bentivoglio and Martin scored in that period, and then Doucette and Morissette scored an empty netter to finish it all off 5-2. Davey, you were at that game, and at the end of the first period, you described it as breathless.
Yeah, I'm just getting my little black book out here, Paddy, from Sunday night to remind myself some of the things that went on. You know, the first thing I've written down here, and as you say about breathless first period, was a frenetic first 5 minutes. There was no stoppages for, I think, about 6 minutes in the game. And you know what the passionate crowd are like there in Cardiff. They're on top. So for like the first 5-6 minutes of that game, we were under the pump. Now, we were getting the odd breakout, but one of the major things that we struggled with in Sunday night, and we have struggled against Cardiff specifically over the last 18 months for whatever, is it Andrew Lord's tactics? I don't know. Our controlled breakout has been really poor. We can't get set up. You know, Cardiff had five men in our defensive zone stopping us getting up the ice, and we're having to then chip and chase out of our own zone. And, you know, that gave them the puck back so many times. And one of the things that really bugged me at the minute, rather than going, I think Sis might have talked about this 2 weeks ago when he's on, rather than going up the boards or going off the glass, we're going up the centre of the ice. And we did it on Saturday night against Brayhead as well. And we get picked off time and time again. And we're just giving up shots from, you know, 60 feet for no reason. And that crowd is a massive factor. They call for absolutely everything. I'm not saying Mike Hicks was particularly influenced, but there was some calls there on Sunday night that were borderline calls, but the crowd are so involved that, you know, they are an extra man down there. That is a big factor for them in this new stadium. And there was so much stick work off the puck the other night. Just Hotham especially was involved two or three times with different players in our team in naughty exchanges. Equally coming back, there was a few spears, a few slashes and stuff coming both directions. So, you know, this is one of those things that I think Vic Silver we talked about on, and Sis actually, because Sis was on that week, the week you were away, that there's a lot more stick play.
Yeah.
In this league at the minute, because Dops aren't stepping up and you know, banning players for these kind of things. So players are doing it behind the puck all the time. But, you know, that first period, we came out 5-on-5. We were okay on Sunday night. It was, okay, all the goals, don't get me wrong, all the goals were scored even strength, but like Cardiff's first goal was scored 2 seconds after a power play expired. You know, I think it was Blair Riley didn't get back into play before they scored. They scored another one after we'd killed, like I think it was a 4 minute penalty we'd killed, so where Leggy Walser had been on for an epically long shift and we got a bad line change and the guys hadn't really got set up again, and bang, 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 all of a sudden we were 3-0 down and it was a big, big hill to climb. Now, okay, we came back into it with the two goals, but, you know, Foster with an absolute bullet, and then Jim Vandermeer leading the charge. I think Vandermeer's might have been scored on the 4-on-4. But, you know, it was just, we left ourselves too much to do, and then once they got that fourth goal early in the third period, it really, really was an uphill struggle.
Says, you know, we spoke last season about the Cardiff Devils and the fact that the advantage they had in the big blue tent, and were they able to translate that game to the bigger ice. Now, the personnel change hasn't been a great deal for the Cardiff Devils. They have probably the majority of the same team they had last season. I watched them on Saturday night take on the Storm at the Drizzle Dome, and they played well on the small ice, and they're playing well on the big ice. They're pretty formidable.
They're a good team. You know, there was a lot of people backed them to win the league this year, and they've recruited well. They play. Davey's mentioned it already. You know, the crowd get behind them, even when they're down. The crowd get behind them, and that can be a real positive. It's one of the things where, you know, our fan base is, the Boomerang Corner is absolutely brilliant, but there's other parts of our arena where you could hear a pin drop to a certain extent, but it's just they are a good team. They're going to be thereabouts this year for either the championship or the playoffs. There's no, I've absolutely no doubt about that.
Says, can I, sorry to just break your stride there, and just one of the questions that Paddy asked about the Bray Head game was, you know, people are asking for more passion. And whenever you look at the Cardiff Devils, not necessarily passion, but work rate, they were in our, they out-battled us and out-worked us so many times. They won the battles on the board all night long, and they forced us into giving them the puck back time and time again. I don't know if that's what maybe people are looking for passion, but to get outworked by a team, to get beaten by a team fair and square is okay, but when you're getting outworked, it's a frustration.
I'm not disagreeing with you. You know, one of the things you were unfortunately didn't get an interview with Derek Walzer after the game on Sunday night, but you know, I know that he was very disappointed with the result. You know, we last season, I mean, a lot of people say that, you know, we weren't good enough to win the league. And we didn't win the league, but we lost the league because we lost 7 games the car to Sheffield Steelers. Now, our league form so far this season, you know, I was taking a look at it later on. We've played 9 games, 5 away and 4 at home, and we've 11 points so far. Now, off the 5 away games, you know, you've 2 against Coventry, which you've won, and you've got, actually, well, three wins against Coventry, haven't we, all together away? Yeah, three wins against Cardiff, or Coventry away, 2 losses against Cardiff and Sheffield, for those 5 games. Now, you play a different game on the road. We it's blatantly obvious we play a different game on the road. But for me, with regards to not showing enough passion when you're out there, it's really difficult to say that, because these guys are all professional. They all want to win. I have no doubt about that. I don't think any of the guys going, you know what, I'm not going to give 100% today. I'll maybe only give 75%. I don't think that's the case. But they need to try harder.
I don't think it's the case here. Like, when I watched back the game, especially the game against Brayhead, for example, where people are calling for it, and I watched somebody like, and we'll talk about it when it comes to the player of the month, because he's definitely in there, is Matteau, and he's driving back to get the puck, and then he's turning and he's being part of the attack on it, you know, and that's going right into the third period. So there is something missing. I'm going to just come to that because I want to move on to that. What is the problem? Where are we falling short, Davey? What is the issue here? Do we need to make changes?
One of the issues, Paddy, and it was brought up, I think it might have been a TFA last week, about someone said about if Adam Keefe isn't doing the business, who picks up that slack? And I think at the minute we are lacking that talismanic figure. You know, we talked about Loiter earlier on. We're talking about Kiefer, who's coming back off, you know, Kiefer was out with for a few weeks with injury, so he's coming back off that. Andrew Lord on Sunday night, he's the player coach, but he leads that team defensively. He throws it. I think he went off. He had to go off because he had taken a block shot to the ankle or something midway through the game. And that's when we got a, unfortunate for them, we got a better line match, maybe because Lord wasn't organising things and we scored the goal from it. He does everything for that team, and he is their leader. He is their heartbeat. Are we perhaps, we have the players of huge ability, like Forney, who's scoring goals, and Blair Riley, who's scoring goals and leading, like the Dustin Whitecotton of a couple of years ago, where he's at one end of the ice and he's at the other end of that workhorse. But have we got that pull them up by the bootstraps kind of leader at the minute, with Kiefer coming back and just not firing all cylinders yet? Have we got it? I think that's maybe just an area that we could be improving on.
Says?
It's a very good point. Again, it's a difficult one, because if we're winning games and we're not putting 100%, then nobody's got a problem with it. Saturday night against Brayhead, you know, you look at the first 14 minutes, we totally controlled. Give them the last couple of minutes of the first period. The second period was a real struggle. Even Davies mentioned it again, 5-on-5 against the Cardiff Devils. You know, you couldn't have told the difference. But when you get a goal scored against you, and then they scored another 2 goals very, very quickly, you know, communication's a big, big thing. And I think that's one of the things that's missing. I really do think it's one of the things that's missing. You know, there was this instance on Sunday night, I think it was their third goal, Quinnell and Martinelli were, they could have held hands skating in behind the net against, I don't know which Cardiff player it was. Cardiff player went one way and both RD went the other way. Now, you know, for a communication side of things, you've got to let your D-man go. You take him, and, you know, the other guy goes in the front of the net. And that's one of the things that we're not doing. If there's no D-man in front of the net, and the two guys are battling in the corner to try and get the puck back, the forward needs to take responsibility and step back into that position as well.
And says, just to butt in again, sorry for doing it, we talked about this either yesterday, maybe it might have even been Sunday night when I rang in the way home from the game. It happened at least, I've watched both games back since, at least half a dozen or more times our net front coverage from exactly the way you've described it. And it wasn't just Martinelli and Quinnell, but they were guilty of it a couple of times. Yeah. I think Knicker and Walser did it, and we coughed up a goal from it against Brayhead. One of their goals came from that.
Both their goals came from the same thing.
You know, Walser has gone in the corner, Knicker's following him in rather than covering the front of goal, and then it's just a foot race. And unfortunately, in that case, we've lost the foot race, but there was just too many times. And you're talking about communication. Does that need to come from the goaltender? These are big boys. You know, they need to be talking to each other on the ice, as you've said there. But too many times, our net front coverage over the weekend just wasn't there.
Again, communication and accountability. Then accountability side of things, you know, you do your stats, David. You do all the plus minuses. You can see who's, you know, who's conceding goals, who's not. And when I got the stats through today, I'm sitting there going, my God, I didn't think, you know, he was that, you know, what was I going to say, he was that bad. But, you know, he's minus five at the minute, and one of the players, and that's, you know, that for me is something not right there. You know, for a team, we're not scoring enough goals. That's one thing. And again, that needs to be taken, accountability needs to be taken from the guys that are up front.
On
the back end,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Says, go ahead. Finish your point.
So on the back end, you've got, you know, you've got the likes of, you know, Walser. Without doubt, he's one of the best defensemen in the league. If you put him up front, he's probably one of the best forwards in the league as well. But we're just, for whatever reason, we're just not communicating enough back there, or well enough back there. Stephen Murphy's been in net a long time. He was in net on Sunday, and I think he probably would have wanted a couple of those goals back on Sunday. I thought on Sunday itself for Stephen, he didn't do particularly well compared to the way he has been playing in the last month.
I don't disagree with that, Sis, but see, when you watch them back, nearly every goal has either a fly screen where guys just skate it across him just as the shot comes, or the Devils are huge. They park a body every single shift. They get a body in front of the opposition netminder. You can go through that game, and every single time they get in the offensive zone, one guy is just tasked with getting to the net.
But I'll come back to him. I want to come back to my question here, because we have...
Have we not answered it?
Well, not necessarily. Well, to an extent you have, but we have seen these players. We've pointed out what's wrong. You've said what the problems are. You're pointing out the fact that these guys have lack of communication, you know, defensive coverage, and the fact that we're not scoring. Okay, we've seen these guys now for 2 months on the ice. We know what their abilities are. We've seen them play brilliantly, but we've also seen maybe the other side of it. Do we make changes? How do we put a rocket up the backside of these guys without sending a message?
One of the TFAs there this week is a question about that. Have we became a soft organisation or whatever? I don't believe that to be the case, but sometimes you can make changes for the sake of making changes. Maybe we need to change lines up defensively, especially before we worry about making changes. All those guys that are on the back end for us are quality D-men. Whenever you put them down on paper and you look at them, okay, the game's not playing on paper. So it could be an issue of, you know, let's change Quinnell and Martinelli. You know, we're very, Van der Meer's playing with Mace, Walser's playing with Knicker. Is there a case for, you know, shaking that six up? Does that light a fire? Does that change things up? Or do we need to make a change? You know, I'm not against making, I don't want anybody to lose their job. Don't get me wrong, but it's about winning. And the first thing that Derek Walser came in when he said last season is, I am going to make players accountable. Well, what is the accountability here? Because results, as I said about results, they're not good enough. I think we've won 4 out of 9 in the league, 4 regulation wins out of 9 games. That's not championship form, and we're now in November.
For me, regards to making changes, Paddy, it can you go two ways. You know, if you decide to take somebody else out of the lineup and you bring somebody in who, you know, if you're looking for a short-term fix, or you're looking for a guy that's basically going to be there at the end of the season, you know, we've got a couple of injuries in the last couple of weeks. This weekend, you know, are we going to have David Rutherford back? If that's the case, then who's going to miss out? Because that's a change.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We've got the extra import there for a reason. So if Rudy's fit, he's got to go back in the lineup. But who do you leave out? Now, who would want to be a coach? That's Derek Walzer and Steve Thornton's. You know, maybe they've got to answer those questions. But for me, I think a change right now would be a good thing because it would let everybody know that, you know what, nobody's safe. But again, it's up to Derek Walzer. And we, you know, I've never booed a Belfast Giants team in my life, and I never will. You know, I've been on one end of the sticker and playing the game, and I know how hard it is. You know, you're skating I was going to say incredible speeds. That's not the case when I was playing. But you know, you're skating on a quarter of an inch of a blade, on ice, and it's not easy. It is not easy. I made it look easy, Davey. I understand that. But if it was up to me right now, I would make a change.
It was Adam Smith who had the question in TFA in regards to that. We might maybe come back to that later on if we talk about it more. The highlights of that game are available from our good friends at Ice Time TV. We'll move ahead, gentlemen, because no doubt we'll come back to talking about this when we're looking ahead to the weekend games. But those games were just passed the last in the month of October, which means we get to see who will succeed David Rutherford in the Player of the Month stakes. Despite some erratic results that we've been talking and the form, there have been a few performances that deserve recognition, and we opened the nominations on Twitter at the beginning of the week. So up for this month's award, sponsored by our good friends at Phonocab, will be number 7, Mark Garside, number 31, Stephen Murphy, number 25, Blair Riley, and number 27, Matt Toe. The poll has opened on Twitter at AVFTB and will conclude on Friday at noon. So get yourself onto our Twitter site at AVFTB, and the winner will be awarded the Player of the Month trophy at the next home game against the Fife Flyers. So boys, Garside, Murphy, Riley and Toe. Davey, who's your choice?
I think that it's close enough to an open and shut case that it'll be Blair Riley. He's had an exceptional month. However, that, you know, that supporting cast there of Matt Toe, Stephen Murphy, Garside have all had really good months as well. Gars, for me, I've said a couple of weeks in a row now in the podcast, he's playing with a real swagger. He's dangling now, and you know, he's not just the win it off centre and just, you know, be in the shade of Keith and Garside or Keith and Lloyd. You know, he's in his own right as a top drawer forward at the minute. You know, he's taking the puck, he's driving nets, he's getting shots, he's getting goals, and he's setting up plays as well. So Toey, we called it the last week's show, was called the Toe Show. You know, I think 3 assists over the last 3 games. He's doing really well. Stephen Murphy, 925 or something over the month, and save percentage in the elite league. So all good signs. But for me, Riley has just been that little bit elevated above even those three.
And we asked why Matt Toe wasn't in the GB squad, and lo and behold, he's in the GB squad and he's playing at this very moment. Says your choice from those floor?
Blair Riley. I think he's just a real workhorse. He's got 2 game-winning goals this month. You know, he's had his 9 mates chopped and chains. Higgy missed a couple of games, and he's just absolutely quality, a real fantastic addition to the squad. I just think that, again, Davey's, you know, commenting on Gar's playing particularly well. Matty Toe's been brilliant. But for me, it's got to be Blair Riley.
And there you have it. I think I have to agree with you too, gents. But the poll is open at AVFTB on Twitter, or if you're not on Twitter, I think you can still vote. Just go to twitter.com/AVFTB and you'll see the poll pinned to the top there. Cast your vote and we'll close the poll at noon on Friday. On to the interviews, and with us coming up against the Blaze once again, I thought we'd chat to a former Blaze D-man, now one of our own, Mike Quinnell. And I started by asking him how the mood was in the dressing room, given our rather erratic October.
Yeah, it's been a little up and down this month for sure. The mood, I guess, is we're trying to find our consistency. We know that when we're on, we're really good. We're right there with the best teams in the league, as we've shown. And I think it's to the point now where we have to find a way to be at our best form every night. And I think it's coming down to, as our as Wally was saying today, is that we have to start being consistent in the little details and the things we do.
How frustrating is it when you get a situation where, you know, you're beating the Brayhead Clan 5-1, but you're going to Sheffield, probably competing with them for 50 minutes and then, you know, 10 minutes and it's all over?
Yeah, it's really frustrating. I think the most frustrating thing is that we know if we played, you know, a full 60, we would have won that game, or, you know, things like we don't have a letdown. So I think that's what we're going to try and, you know, moving forward is getting on to this, being consistent for a full 60, because we know when we play a full 60 minutes that we're very unbeatable. So I think that's a big focus moving forward here for the team, is that we need to be consistent every night, and we really have to try and limit our letdowns and our mistakes.
Derek Walser said a couple of times now about wanting to have have you guys as the fittest, most physically fit team in the league. Of course, you know, more or less every professional outfit wants to be the most physically fit, but are you guys being put for a real workout to try to get to that level?
Yeah, I mean, I think, this week in Cardiff, we kind of tired out maybe a little bit, but, we've been working really hard, and, Derek's on top of all our workouts and, how many calories we're burning and our heart rates. We're all, being kept track of. So, we've been working hard, and I think, you know, I don't think condition really is too much of an issue for us right now, but that being said, you can always improve on that. It's something that day in and day out we do try to improve on.
You came in after, you know, a few weeks of the season, whatever, we've got two netminders behind you. As a D-man, do you have to change your style of game, or do you guys as a D-core have to change your style of game depending on whether it's Murphy Nets or it's Jackson Whistle?
No, I don't think so. Both are very top quality goalies, as they've shown this year. I think just the philosophy for the back end is trying to keep the majority of everything, shots and whatnot, to the outside, outside the dots, especially on the bigger rinks. But no, we don't change, you know, the way we play for depending on who's in that now.
It must be great for Derek Walser to have that, and you guys to have two really competent netminders just being able to rotate night in, night out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great feeling knowing that, you know, if one of them gets injured or one of them's, you know, having a bad night, which is rare for them, but the other guy's right there ready to step in. And I think especially in this league, it's a luxury to have two goalies that, you know, that are battling for the number one spot as we have right now.
Is there a real battle in training? Are you guys still putting them through their paces?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that, especially this week, it's been a little tough without having, you know, some guys gone for the international friendlies, but we need to pick up our compete level, so that starts in training. So, Derek's been preaching that we need to compete harder in training, so that'll translate into games. And if we keep doing that, if we, you know, keep improving our fitness, then hopefully we can find some consistency here and get on a bit of a roll.
We've played more or less everybody now except for the Manchester Storm. Of all those teams, who's been the most difficult opponent?
We had that letdown in Sheffield, which kind of was disappointing, but Cardiff for sure has been, a really good team that has risen up in our league. But that being said, you know, I think there's a lot more parity in this league than what I've been told there has been in the last couple of years. And, it seems like on any night now, any team can win. So there's not really any games where you go into thinking it might be an easy one. You know, every night's going to be a battle right to the end.
Absolutely. And given your own game, Michael, there's a lot of individuals in that room. There's a lot of talent in that Belfast Giants locker room. When you sit there and look around the locker room, is there anybody you think to yourself, I wish I could do what he does, or I wish I could do what he does? Whose game would you like to have if you didn't have your own?
That's a good question. We do have a lot of guys. Up front, we have some really skilled guys in like Higgy and Fournier, and we got some real like workhorses and Blair Riley and Saviano. You know, guys on the back, and, you know, Derek is extremely skilled, and a guy like Vandermeer, you know, the experience and the calmness he brings to the game, so any one of those guys. But, you know, that's a really good question. I've never really been asked that before. But, yeah, we have a really good mix of skill and grit and work on our team that I think, like I've been saying all night, if we find that consistent effort, is only going to pay dividends for us in the long run.
Absolutely. Well, we've got the Blaze again this weekend, given you're a former Coventry Blaze man yourself. You must be sick of the sight of them by now, or maybe just used to seeing them by now. And it's also it's also two games this weekend on the road, but we've got quite a few games on the road over the next month or so. So looking to this weekend, first of all, and then in the longer term, how are you guys preparing to have that sort of long road stretch?
Yeah, I mean, this weekend, I think it's exactly the same as the weekend we had about 2 weeks ago, where we had Coventry and Nottingham.
Yeah.
We were a little short-staffed, and we, you know, we played probably two of our better games all year. We won both, and we kept things simple. But, you know, the nice thing, I think, as a team sport going on the road is that the guys, you know, they spend all their time together. So, you know, it's kind of an opportunity to bond, a little team bonding opportunity. I guess guys get a little break from their wives and families if that's the case for them. But, you know, it's just going to be come down to the rest that we need to during the week, and also, you know, doing the work that we're going to have to prepare for the teams that we're facing. Because, like you said, I know we're on the road for pretty much most of November. So, I mean, for most guys in their career, they're used to having the road trips. So we just need to prepare properly during the week and get ready for each one.
And thanks to Mike. David, Mike Quinnell came in, well, it was a couple of weeks into the season, or a couple of week or two into the season, settled in pretty quickly.
Yeah, and we said at the time, you know, let's give him 10 games or so before we're really, you know, critique how he's done. And certainly those first four or five games he came in and he did exactly what he said he was going to do. He took the body and he played really simple game. And he's maybe gone through a bit of that, you know, that sophomore slump over the last sort of five games where he perhaps hasn't been as good as he was those first five games. And I think we're only after talking about it, you know, does he need to change line mates? Do we need to shake things up the day there? Because he clearly hasn't been as good over the last, you know, four or five weekends that as he has in the previous week. So, you know, only second year, you know, pro as we know as well. And, you know, you have to let all these new environment, you have to be respectful that you don't throw somebody under the bus very quick. You know, he has been here a short period of time, but we're assessing him after 10 games and he's, you know, I'm 50-50 on him at the minute. You know, he's had 50% of really, really high quality. And I think the last four or five games he's tailed off slightly. He needs to pick it up again. Really good guy and, someone that could be a real key force going forward for us, because he has proven in those first four, five, six games when he came in what he can add to our decor. Very, very plays the game really simple, makes his first pass crisp, gets the puck out well off the glass, as we talked about being required earlier on, just slightly gone off the boil for me.
That's what it is. It says it's the fact that Davies, I think, said it there himself, second year pro, and has actually shown at times exactly the high quality of game that he has.
Yeah, I like him. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he brings his physical presence and you know, doesn't mind throwing the body about and you know, blocking shots as well. So he does exactly what it says in the tin for his role. He hasn't, the last couple of games, yeah, I think he certainly could improve. But then again, you know, the worst taste in your mouth is that last game, and the last game was a defeat to the Devils. So it's definitely, I think it's everybody can improve on and hopefully put things right this weekend.
Absolutely. And we'll come on to this weekend's game, as always, towards the end of the show. Right, around the league, what to talk about. Right, we got Dops, Steelers, Panthers, Storm. Davey, what are we going to start with? What do you want to start with?
Dops.
Do you want to start with Dops? Right, we'll put the jingle in right here.
Dops. 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 Yeah, yeah, Dops. 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 Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to start with comments that Todd Kelman made last week publicly. I think it was some sort of question and answer session, or maybe it was something to do with Ice Guardian, something like that. But he was asked a question about the Department of Player Safety, and he stated that it was Simon Kirkham, and that's it. This was broadcast on our good friend from Icetime TV's Gareth Hughes' Periscope, and it came as a bit of a shock, considering we're told that Dops' formation is one that's led to, it's more of a committee. So, says, I'll start with you, is the fact that it's just quote-unquote Simon Kirkham, maybe involving the referee at hand as well, is that poor communication from the Elite League, poor judgment from Todd Kelman to let us know this, or just poor overall?
I don't understand what the problem is about transparency. If it's just Simon Kirkham, then say it's just Simon Kirkham. I honestly don't see the problem. Simon Kirkham was one of the top referees in this country for a long time. He's now the head of the referees. And if that's his role, I have absolutely no problem with that. None whatsoever. But the last I heard, it was going to be top officials from over Europe and North America. That's the last that I heard about this. And it's obviously, if Todd Kelman is telling the truth and I've no reason to think otherwise, then why don't the guys just come out and go, right, well, this is the case. This is the way it is. Simon Kirkham makes every decision with regards to DOPS, and that's it. I don't think anybody have a problem with it.
I don't think so either. Davey, you were on the View from the Bridge Twitter account. You said it was no secret that it's Simon Kirkham and a referee. Why was that?
Yes.
Leave that in. Make sure you leave that in.
No, you can't panic. Come on.
Okay. And that one scrambled down. I thought, Davey, the actual words on my sheet, and I'll send you the picture. It says, Davey under the bus. The Okay, I'll come back to you. Okay. Davey, your take, poor communication or just poor overall? Or do you think that, fair enough?
I think that I've been banging the same drum for a long time that DOPS has been poorly implemented, that there is poor communication. At the end of the day, I think from talking to Todd maybe at the weekend, he wasn't aware that it was being broadcast to the world either. But, I don't believe a one-man show is good enough. From the point of, trying to articulate this out a bit, there's so many calls that are judgment calls, opinion calls. One person views it so differently from another. So even in the case of Craig Peacock and the Walser incident from the other week, I think you'd struggle to find 10 people that think it was okay, and you might find 1,000 that think it was a suspension. It's that Simon Kirkham is one of the 10, but his opinion is the only one that counts. Perhaps that, obviously, Tom Darnell is also one of the 10 there, but there's only a very small percentage of people that think that. So I think there needs to be, do you want to call it a committee, whatever, but I think DOPS needs to be more than one person plus the referee's report. I think it's putting an awful lot of pressure on Simon Kirkham.
Yeah.
Even we're going to talk about other incidents coming up here, and we've talked about incidents over the season as well. That just, on first view, we've been watching, Simon's been playing this game since he was a young lad. I've been watching this game for, I'm 42 now, the Ice Bowl opened in 85, says 86, something like that.
30 years this year.
So, 30 years I've been going to arenas watching games, and from then, my love of the sport took off and I've been watching it on TV. What's a hell of a lot of hockey for the 30 years? I think I can critique a game pretty well. And when we look at these incidents and you go, open shot case, that's going to be a suspension. And they come back and go, oh, well, he wasn't injured, so, we'll play on. Injuries should be taken into consideration, but they shouldn't be the only consideration. That Derek Walser wasn't injured, so Craig Peacock wasn't suspended, sends a bad message out, and you've seen some of the incidents since then.
Yeah.
And it's a case of Simon's making a rod for his own back here. And I think
Kirkham, Simon Kirkham.
Yeah. Simon Kirkham. Okay. Yeah.
Simon Kirkham. Oh no, Simon.
Is making a rod for his own back because he's putting pressure on himself here now that it's been exposed officially that, It is only him making these decisions. I think the league need to support DOPS or change DOPS.
Hashtag vote Davey. On that, the two incidents this week, there was an automatic review, 2+10 check into the head penalty on the Fife Flyers' David Turon for an incident on Sunday night in a game against the Dundee Stars. With all due respect to that, we're actually going to focus on the other one that was there as a request from the Coventry Blaze on the Sheffield Steelers, Zach Fitzgerald, following their game against the Sheffield Arena Saturday night. Now, the DOPS official account doesn't name what the incident is, but I think we can guess. 12:35 into that Challenge Cup game, there's a collision with Brian Stewart. Stewart left the game at the end of the first period, and there's been no news as to his situation. He didn't return to that game, and he didn't play in the following game the next night. Marr has struggled in the nets for the Blaze. We'll come to the Blaze later in the show when we talk about our game against them. But Sizz, what about that hit from Fitzgerald?
Yeah, you know, I think Fitzgerald's got it do better, and I think he knew exactly what he was doing. In my opinion, you know, he's cutting in from the wing. He's a big, big body, but he's got to either stick the brakes on there before he gets to Brian Stewart, or he's got to try and cut to the top of the crease, because to me, he totally knew exactly what he was doing. And he took Brian Stewart out by the roots. And, you know, the annoying thing is that nobody made him accountable for it, you know, that night. It was just, I thought it was ridiculous that, the team spirit and within the Coventry Blaze at that time, somebody ever went to hit my goalie. And, you know, I've jumped out of a penalty box to get torn into somebody when they did it before. But I thought it was totally unacceptable from Coventry Blaze perspective.
I think that as bad as the hit was from Fitzgerald on Stewart, I thought the lack of team spirit and the fact that nobody, not one single player for the Coventry Blaze, like you say, waded in to try to protect who is probably undoubtedly their best player, who they've now lost. I think that was a bit poor from the Coventry Blaze. But like I say, we'll come back to that. Davey, your thoughts on the actual hit and the incident with Fitzgerald?
Stewart, as we know, is an aggressive goaltender and he's coming out the top of his crease, but Fitzgerald can avoid contact there. He chooses contact over avoiding it. You know, there's so many ways Simon has articulated there how to get out of the way. You cut back the top of the crease, just go over the top of the goaltender, as in dive over the top of him, you know, clear away, cut back to the left, don't slow down coming into it, check, stop. You know, there's so many ways he could have avoided contact, but he chose to lead with the arm and go into Stewart and make contact with him. And it does look principal point to contact is towards the head area. I think he could be, the way Dobbs is, depends what way Simon Kirkham looks at it, of course. That's Joe Bann. But apart from Joe Bann, Simon's right. The accountability from the Blaze players in that incident, that is what fighting in ice hockey, that is when it happens, when someone hits your goal. Simon Kitchen, if somebody had knocked my coke over when I was a wee lad, he'd have climbed up into the balcony and knocked him out for me. You know, and
that's during the game.
And that's during the game. And Jason Bowen, we talked to Bosey, that's a while ago now, I was up in the press box talking to Bosey one night, and he said, see, if you were in my team, Davey, nobody would come near you. Because if anybody even breathed on you, I would pull him out. And that, you know, the Liam Kirk incident, although we're saying that he's 16, he has to stand up for himself. All the Sheffield players show team spirit there. You're hitting our kid, we're going to knock you out. Mm. And that's team spirit, and it's the opposite of what Coventry have.
Yeah. Well, there's been no response from Dobbs as yet. We're now talking Wednesday evening. We'll keep an eye on AVFTB for the result. In that, heaven knows what's going to happen with regards to the injury being on the play. Maybe that has an effect, but we'll see. Keeping with the Steelers, they're 2 points in the cup and 2 points in the league against the Blaze. But this week, quite shockingly, they've lost Tyler Mosienko, who left the club for Denmark and appears to be in difficult circumstances, or given the reaction from the club itself and its officials on Twitter, not least the Sheffield Stars' Bob Westerdale, suggesting that the two-time Elite League champion shirt be ceremonially burned. He's been replaced, though, quick enough, by the uniquely named Jared Haggas. I assume that's how you say it, or Haggas, I don't know. We'll find out soon enough. Davey, Mosienko's been one of their, if not their best, well, we've got Matteo, of course, but Mosienko's been a hell of a key player in both those championships, and gone, blink of an eye.
You look at how Hitchy waxes lyrical about, and Hitchy doesn't get excited. Well, he gets very excited at a win, but he doesn't get very excited about individual players very much. He's a big fan of Wah and what Wah brings. You know, he'll tell you if you want to listen to him that he's the best player in the league. And Mosienko was right up there with Wah as a key player for the Steelers. Interestingly, how quickly they burnt the bridges there. You know, obviously they've got no intention of, if it doesn't work out for Mosienko in Denmark or wherever he went to, that there's a chance of getting him back. Why would you go back to that club if they put that media out about you? Money, of course, money talks, but, you know, Sim Z Westerdale at we're going to burn your shirt, I'll give you a lift to the airport. It's just classless. And, you know, he's been a good servant to him. Obviously, something's going on behind the scenes, and they've, you know, they're really, really upset about the way things and how he's left the club. But, you know, It's a really, really difficult thing to talk about, Paddy, but that's just a classless move from those two guys.
Yeah, says the guys come in, Yaron Hagros. He's played in some decent leagues, DELs, Swiss leagues and the likes. Not putting up massive numbers. Maybe not the player, well, from statistically or from what we're seeing. Obviously, we haven't seen the guy play that much or if at all. Maybe not the type of player that would be a direct replacement for Mosienko, but looks like a bit of a power forward.
Yeah, he does. I had a look at his league prospects stats there yesterday when he signed. And, you know, he definitely does look if he could be a handy player for them. You know, does have a good shot on him when coming to Spurs, but that's besides the point. you know, it's the Mosienko for me was MVP of the league last year, arguably. You know, I thought he was absolutely outstanding for the Steelers. Won them many points last year and the season before, and I think it'll be a big miss for them. You know, again, Davey's already said about, you know, about these guys commenting on it and a lack of class and I don't know. I just don't get that part of it. You know,
Could you imagine it when, like, if it was Premier League football? Could you imagine, like, if somebody left the team? Like, when Torres went to Chelsea, could you imagine some official from Liverpool Football Club coming out and saying, we're going to burn a shirt, or I'll drive you down to Chelsea myself? It just doesn't happen in professional sports.
No, I honestly just think it's a pure lack of respect for the player. Now,
and a good player for the Steelers, a guy who's key to the championships.
You know, one of the things that you don't know what's happened behind closed doors. No, you know, you've got to, there's always three sides of the story. There's one side, there's the other side, and then there's somewhere truth somewhere in the middle. Yeah. But I honestly don't know why, you know, somebody leaves. I agree with Dave Sims and what he said, but I wouldn't put that comment out. Yeah. You know, Dave Sims has basically said, you know, I'll drive you to the airport. I do exactly the same. If somebody doesn't want to play for my club, then by all means, cheerio, but I wouldn't have put it on Twitter. I mean, I'm quite vocal and not afraid to say most things, but, you know, I've got to have better respect for players who have won championships for our team. And
says there's a difference between you saying it as, you know, on a level of me and Paddy and the likes of Steve Thornton, or that's like a Shane Johnson or someone coming out and tweeting that. You know, you've got to be better than that. We've talked about Sheffield for how many years now and how they air their dirty laundry in public, you know. They've just got to be classier than that, surely.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
No, I thought it was poor, but we'll see how this new player steps in for them when we come to play them in a few weeks' time and the likes. But we wish Mosienko luck now that he's left the league, and if he does want to come back, you know, Belfast Giants always a good option. I'm going to go down the motorway and talk about the Nottingham Panthers, who have had a horrible weekend. They got spanked at home by the Edinburgh Capitals before travelling north of the border to their sister club in Brayhead, only to lose there also. But neither of those two were the most embarrassing thing of the weekend. The most embarrassing thing of the weekend was the appearance of an inflatable bear for the players to skate out of to begin the game. Do you want to explain that, Davey?
I can't explain it. The most embarrassing thing for me was the result, because I had them in a double with the Giants. So Paddy Parker.
You bet on the Panthers to win.
They were playing the Edinburgh Capitals. Come on. You're but cheap, and then what, Storm go to Edinburgh the next night and whack 4 or 5 past them? It's one of those results. The players almost came out of the bar and were too embarrassed to play. I had a little tweet about it because it looked like a sad Jade Galbraith lying on the ice after it got deinflated. But I see that they have to trail it the length, the 200 feet off the ice, and they can't get it down. And it's a bear. It's not a panther.
It doesn't look anything like a panther.
Just not. But as someone brilliantly put there the other day, you know, they're going to change the badge in the front of the shirt and all. It's just something to keep us amused. Something else that keeps panthers on the front pages.
It was obviously it's on a long line. We've got our inflatable regards to the Giants coming out of the big mouth of Finn McCool that the Blaze have theirs. The Cardiff Devils must be delighted, Sis, because I think that the Panthers bear made their one look less crap.
Yeah, the Panthers A-board looks fantastic. Or sorry, the Devils A-board looks fantastic. I actually think the Blaze one's brilliant. I think it looks really, really well.
It is, yeah.
But the Panthers, honest to God, I mean, it, I don't know, blame on the galloping horse. Could say that's not a panther.
Baloo the bear. Anyway, we'll come back to the Panthers crew. We're going to talk about them in regards to this weekend. The Manchester Storm had a tight game against the Devils, pulling it back to force overtime before the visitors took the points away from the Drizzle Dome. Then, as Davey said, the Storm went up to Edinburgh to take the win and give them a 3-point weekend. But the most notable news for them this week was the visit of Justin Bieber to training, where he not only did he play and score a few goals on Mike Clemente, but he also socialised with the players and won Neil Russell. So the first question is, mate, can you sing us your favourite Justin Bieber song?
Oh, Paddy, you've just totally and utterly thrown this at me.
Come on.
Yes, I love the way you look as much, and baby, you can go and love yourself. Something like that. No, well, idea.
Fair play.
Don't know one song.
Fair play. I have to say, I actually thought you were going to bat that one back, but you didn't. So, what on earth, how on earth, just run us through this again.
Do you know what? There is actually a Belfast Giants connection in this, believe it or not. It all started, do you know what? I'm going to take it right back to the very inception, and I think we're going to go back to probably mid-September, sitting in the office one day, Omar Pasha, who, by the way, is the ultimate Justin Bieber fan, amazingly. The ultimate Justin Bieber fan, said, oh, Neil, Justin Bieber's coming to Manchester. He's coming. Yeah, you have to get him here. You have to get Justin Bieber to come and skate with us. It's like Pash. Like Pash sometimes lives in what I call, or what he would call, La La Land. Pash, these things just aren't as easy as just phoning up Justin Bieber and going, hey, bud, you want to come for a skate? But anyway, we sent an email off. Never heard anything back. Didn't expect to hear anything back. Put in a couple of phone calls here and there, just kind of saying, you know, does anybody know anything? Blah, 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 blah. Then got a phone call from the legend that is Taff Ellery, to say that there was a guy in London who was looking for my number, who he knew from his London Knights days. He was connected with the O2 Arena in London and would be interested or wanted to get my number because Justin Bieber was interested in coming to skate in whilst he was in Manchester. So that led me on to speak to that guy, which then in turn put me in contact with Bieber's PA. So the communication really started from there, Paddy. And whenever I say communication, it was crazy to actually get this organized. It was absolutely madness, but we got there in the end.
What sort of like reaction? Obviously, the reaction's been huge. Bieber put the picture up on his Twitter. Was it 80 million people or 80 million followers have that? But
yeah,
you've had interest from right across the world. And what does this mean to the Manchester Beliebers?
It's funny. He stuck it up on social media, and as you said, went absolutely crazy, and still is. I mean, there's hundreds upon hundreds of retweets and favourites and comments coming through in the Storm Twitter feed every single day still. I'm not sure what it's up to. I think it's up to like 20-odd thousand retweets and 40-odd thousand favourites or whatever. But I mean, it's funny, a lot of the fan base were like, that we run to hope Erik Nielsen ran him over, but, you know, ripped him into the boards and all this type of stuff. But the way I look at it, and I said this funny to a few people over the last kind of week, the big thing from our perspective, obviously, as a new club again, in essence, over the last 13, 14 months, it's that exposure. And you know yourself, you're a Manchester native now. you know, it's Man United, it's Man City, in this city, and to try and grab those kind of front page, back page headlines, it's very, very difficult. And so the way I look at the overall PR and all this is it now gives the Storm that credibility with those major news outlets. I now have the main people in all those major outlets who have struggled to get the hold of, you know, throughout the course of the last year and on different occasions. And, you know, you're trying to almost like sell a new sport to a lot of these people as well. So, I mean, I've been in constant contact with a lot of those guys over the last week, and it has, I mean, it's given us huge exposure. BBC News, World, local BBC, local ITV News. It was on absolutely everything, all the major radio stations as well. So, I mean, it's just funny that something like that all of a sudden just sparks. Instead of maybe me putting in the phone calls left, right, and center there, contacting me now, saying, we'd like to run a piece, you know, in the future as well. We'd like to do a follow-up about this. We'd like to do X, Y, and Z. So I think from my side as general manager of the club, I think it gives us, with the mainstream media here in Manchester, just that bit more credibility, I suppose.
Coach, obviously we've seen the footage as well, and it was absolutely brilliant for you. It's a real coup, but any concerns over how easily you beat your goaltender?
It was a damn good finish actually from the kid. He can play. I mean, I spoke to the security guys just before the game.
Hold up. Ding. There we go.
I was chatting to him just before he hit the ice, and he said, you know what? hockey is his first love. He grew up and he just loves going out and skating whenever he can. He brings all his own equipment, all his own skates, sticks, pads, everything, wherever he goes on tour, takes him wherever he can. He's always trying to find a rink to go and skate in his free time. So, I mean, he can play. He can
Like, make it like old days. Let me butt in there. try and put a picture, because obviously there was very few people got to actually sit. Paint the picture. Bieber turns up at the rink. He's got his gear with him. Does he just muck in with the rest of the boys, just goes in the locker room, gets changed, and let's hit the ice, lads?
What about you, lads? David, let's go for it.
David, I could probably tell you the full story, which would end up taking, well, what our normal podcast used to be, about 2 hours, 45 minutes. I mean, whenever he arrived, eventually, I mean, he cancelled on us three times, which, so you can imagine me, Mr. Organized and all that type of stuff, it kind of rattled me whenever I kept getting cancellation after cancellation after cancellation, because for us as well, I mean, the Manchester Storm are obviously tenants at Silver Blades Ice Rink. Our owners own the rink and the Storm, so it does make relationships that bit easier to kind of get that ice time if and when required, but still, we had to cancel three sessions, which, you know, three public sessions. I had to go to the rink and get them to cancel. So it was a bit of a nuisance, but eventually he obviously turned up, and whenever he did, he turned up with his entourage. He just came up the side of the rink, in through the side door, walked straight into the locker room, started introduced himself, to all the guys. We were kind of given a bit of a heads up in terms of, just be yourselves. If you play loud music, play loud music. If the guys all take the mick out of each other, just act normal, because it's his release. So he came in the locker room, as I say, was very polite, mannerly, respectful with all the guys, got himself changed in the stall, got his skates on, and away off he went. And, you know, he had good fun out there on the ice. I mean, Trevor Johnson was lining him up with a pile of one-timers towards the end of the session. And I think he said to TJ, you know, it's the best fun I've had in months. You know, he just absolutely loved it. So I think the guys were just pretty laid back and tried to act as normal as possible, I suppose, around him. But whilst at the same time, you see his security entourage and all that comes with him, you know, you just know you're in front of a global superstar.
One last question, because I have another question after that, but it's more about the Storm themselves. But when you left there and then you just went round to the tavern, did you phone ahead and say, here lads, by the way, we're popping around here and we've got Justin Bieber with us? And did they go, aye, dead on, Mucker?
It was funny because, just as the guys were all coming off the ice, Trevor Johnson said to me, here, Bieber's talking about like wanting to take us out here for a few drinks. I was like, well, whatever. I mean, I have to say I was surprised, but you know, saying what, locally or in the city? And he says, I think locally. So there's this, a bar/restaurant that our guys kind of use quite a bit. It's a minute's walk away from the rink. It's lovely kind of small, quaint pub restaurant. And everybody went round. There was not a sinner in the place. All the guys walked in with Bieber, his entourage. Boys all started playing darts with him. Bieber went and lifted like the Connect Four game, started playing Connect Four with the guys, was arm wrestling with the guys. Also, I mean, he just enjoyed being around the lads' company and just having, I suppose, like a normal night out with a bunch of lads. And inside 20 minutes, that empty bar was packed. There was kids outside. There was a paparazzi guy outside. There were parents driving their kids down to the bar. My phone was going from people at the MEN newspapers and TVs and all sorts. It was crazy how word just gets out so quickly. It was crazy, but the guys went on, and it was probably the only time that I've given them a weeknight pass, but the guys went on and had a good night out with them as well later on into the city and all the rest. So, yeah.
You know, Coach, just, I know Paddy's going to come back on the storm there, but just listening to you talking about Beaver, it almost makes me, you know, like he's obviously a global superstar. He's a millionaire. I don't, Paddy doesn't have to necessarily keep this pit in, but you know, do you not feel an element of almost sorrow for him that, you know, even on, he's coming the other side of the world, he's having a brilliant night out, and it's almost spoiled by paparazzi coming, millions of people coming. He just sounds like he wants to have a game of Connect Four, a beer, some darts, some hockey. Just a normal kid wanting a good night out, and all of a sudden that's taken away from him.
Good question.
Do you know what, mate? There was a couple of things really to kind of comment on that. Speaking again, the security staff actually said that his head of security, while they're all out on the ice, just tell me, like, what type of life does this kid have? And he said, it's like nothing you could ever imagine. He said, I'm with him 24/7, house in LA, I'm there with him 24/7. He cannot walk out his front door, walk down the street at any stage to go and buy milk, bread, can't do anything at all. So he sees hockey as his kind of release. And, you know, I think that's why he probably really enjoyed our lads' company, because for whatever, half an hour, 35 minutes, they had that bar to themselves. They were having a few drinks, they were playing darts, they were playing Connect Four, they were having arm wrestles, just having like a normal kind of lads' night out. And yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll stick up for him, because he got plenty of stick here, as Paddy will tell you, in the media in Manchester for his concerts, because I think he was quite abrupt, yeah, at different stages with the fans and what have you, for not kind of, for always screaming, while he was trying to kind of put across some prophetic points to do with his purpose tour or whatever. But he was an absolute gentleman with all our guys. Came in, shook everybody's hand, was very polite, bought the guys drinks, all sorts. I mean, he was just, and people then in the bar were kind of going up to him as well, and, you know, can I get a photograph? He hated photographs. He was just like, no, you know, I don't want, but you know, I'll come and give me a hug. And he was very polite with all the kind of the girls and the people that were coming up trying to speak to him all the time. And jeepers, I mean, it can't be an easy life for him, Davey, that is for sure. I mean, can you imagine just constantly people looking at you wherever you go? And no matter how cool you're trying to look, you know, even whenever he's out skating or standing waiting there to kind of take to the ice, kind of he knows that every pair of eyes in that place is kind of on him. He knows that can't be easy for the kid either. So I have to say, kudos to him. Thought he was a gentleman while he was with the guys.
I don't have to imagine what that life's like, mate. Have that life.
You get that whenever you walk into the storm shelter every week.
Yeah. I'd be okay drying my tears with £50 notes.
And I don't see what
you say that.
I don't see why you'd bring to the tavern. There's nothing wrong with the station just across the way. That station bar's perfectly fine. I don't see anything wrong.
Anyway, listen. Ready,
one last thing. The it'd be a miss not to have a quick chat about the storm. Obviously, we won't face you until the end of this month. But
that's right.
You guys have been doing pretty well. You've really turned this team's got a new look for you. I came along and watched you play the Devils at the weekend, and you know, you came back into that game, a lovely backhand shelf equalizer from Connor Varley. But it's a really different look to this side, and you're playing pretty well.
Yeah, we are. I mean, that's the type of game, funny, speaking to Pash and Mike Moran after the game, and that's the type of game, Paddy, that this time last year we were probably lost 6-1, 6-2. I thought Cardiff were excellent on Saturday night. I thought they were a bit slow out of the traps, but I thought you can see their overall quality, their depth, within their side. They're a quality hockey team. But, you know, one thing that we've really impressed on our guys is the importance of home form. You know, we have, and we've made no secret of the fact, we've built a team that's very much built for the storm shelter, the kind of the smaller ice. You know, and listen, we've done well. We've done well so far, and we're competing hard. I mean, the only game that's really at home that I've been disappointed with would be the Brayhead game, and I'm sure Pash would say exactly the same. You know, I thought Brayhead just they were in desperation mode and they just wanted it that bit more than us that night. But all the games that we've played, I mean, we've had some howitzer games against Sheffield so far, we've held our own, especially with the big boys, and we've beaten Coventry there a couple of times as well. So, I mean, we're ticking along nicely. I like us. I like our compete level. It sounds like a coach or whatever, but I mean, our compete level is really, really strong. And you mentioned young Connor Varley there. I know we were chatting about him on message a couple of days ago, but he's a young kid who's come straight out of Penn State University. And honestly, he's just a general manager and a coach's dream. He just comes to work every single day, wants to get better. He's like a sponge. He just soaks up everything that goes on in that locker room. He listens to every word that Trevor Johnson says, Eric Nielsen says, and you know, he gives you 100% every single night. And certainly, I mean, bar one night really in Fife where we got totally blown out, we've competed in every single game, and I actually think the best of the Manchester Storm is still to come over the next while. So I think, you know, at this stage, I think Pash and I are both pretty content with what we've seen so far.
Well, on that note, mate, we'll let you go. If you ever get a call from Beyonce to be on the ice, just make sure you write that my call's the next one, and we'll have you on again just in the build up to the game at the Drizzle Dome. But thanks very much.
Thanks, Paddy. Thanks, David.
Thanks to Coach. Just a quick comment. Me and David have just chatted with him there. Your thoughts on the Bieber-gate?
Jasmine, my wee girl, was raging.
Really?
Absolutely fuming. That Neil Russell got his autograph for himself. Apparently got it to Neil. It's good for the PR side of things and for the Manchester Storm. I've got to give him credit in these, when it's due, and he's doing a good job getting that side of things. And the Manchester Storm seem to be putting a few results together as well. But hopefully that'll all end in a couple of weeks' time, and the Giants make a trip across over to the Drizzle Dome.
Finally, on Around the League, Team GB, Matt Toby said, got a call-up. And last night, which was Tuesday night, they lost 2-1 to Norway at the NIC. The game's ongoing now for the second leg in Cardiff. Do we have a score?
I can't see. Yep.
4-2 Norway.
It's 4-2 Norway with 22 seconds left.
Oh, so it's 4-2 Norway.
Do you want me to elaborate on that?
Huh?
Want to come back? Do you want to say any word, David? I'll give you a quick pump on the score.
Okay, give us a second. I'm just going to write down.
That man.
Any score, David?
Paddy, the game has literally just finished. It's a 4-2 win to Norway. Jack Prince with both goals for Team GB and assists to Liam Stewart and Davy Phillips with the other one. Tom Murdy and nets for Team GB tonight. I don't know whether Murdy played the whole game. I think there was talk of Jackson Whistle maybe getting a bit of ice time. I'm not sure, but bar scrolling through one of 1,000 tweets by Rob Plaister tonight. I can't find that out, but we'll find that out later on.
Oh, Jackson Whistle started tonight.
That is, so Whistle started, so Murdy must have come in for relief at some stage.
Says games against Norway, obviously a top level team, and sort of rotating the way that Pete Russell has. What do you think the guys gain from games like this?
You represent your country as well, Paddy, and it's one of those things where it's always an honour, and you get called up and you get a chance to impress the head coach Peter Russell, and I think it's good for the young guys who have come up, especially tonight seems to be more of a development side to play, whereas last night was more the experienced long-running GB side. So I think it's good, I think it'll, it bodes well for the GB setup, because the way they've got their under 16, 17, 19s, 20s as well now, I know a few of the coaches involved in that, and they're doing a great job, and Peter Russell and Dyke will get the guys going again tonight, and 4-2 loss against Norway tonight for a development squad. You gotta give the guys credit. That's a pretty good result.
It always warms my heart to hear Irish international Simon Kitchen talk about representing his country and how much of an honour it is. Good man, Stace. Good to hear that.
I've got, Davey's got one of my shirts as well, mate. So I've got one of my own, and Davey's got one, so.
Right, well, let's move on. Only a few weeks to the return of the Friendship Four. Four new teams coming to the SSE to battle it out for the bell pot. So it's time we found out a little more about them. In a few minutes, our good friend Ronan McClure from the Pink Puck website will have a chat with Kevin Sneddon. But first, let's find out a bit more about the university for which he's the hockey head coach, the University of Vermont.
University of Vermont was founded in 1791 and is one of the oldest universities in the USA. The Vermont Catamounts are the university's men's NCAA Division I hockey representatives and have, since 1990, been playing in Hockey East after having been a member of ECAC between 1974 and 2005. Vermont have reached the Frozen Four twice, in 1996 and 2009, losing in the semifinals on both occasions. Vermont have also made six NCAA tournament appearances, most recently in 2014. Currently, Vermont are under the stewardship of coach Kevin Sneddon, who's just the fourth coach in the history of the club and has been in place since 2003, leading his side to a 189-204-60 record up until the start of this current season. Of course, Vermont are no strangers to tournament play, having hosted the Catamount Cup every year since 1990 at their Gutterson Field home arena. Hosted around New Year's each year and featuring the home team and three invited opponents, Vermont have claimed the title, most recently in the season just passed when they defeated Colgate in the final. There are several famous Vermont alumni who have gone on to the NHL and several who have had high levels of success. University of Vermont has produced 18 National Hockey League players in its history. Alumni currently in the NHL include Victor Stahlberg, Torrey Mitchell, Patrick Sharp, Kevin Miller, Connor Brickley and Michael Pagliotta. Two names that stand out in recent NHL history have come out of the Catamount system are Martin St. Louis and Tim Thomas, both of whom collected Stanley Cup championships with Tampa Bay and Boston respectively. Both were also multiple award winners in their NHL careers, with St. Louis collecting the Hart Memorial Trophy as the NHL's most valuable player, the Art Ross Trophy as the NHL's leading scorer, and the Lester B. Pearson Trophy Award as the league's most outstanding player in the regular season. Thomas collected two Vezina trophies as the NHL's best goalie and the Conn Smythe for MVP of the NHL playoffs. So far this year, the Catamounts have put together a 4-1-1 record and will be coming to Belfast aiming to further improve that record. For those wishing to scout the teams before the tournament, the dress rehearsal for the Friendship 4 game takes place on November the 12th as Vermont visit UMass Amherst.
My name's Rhonda McClure. I'm with the Pink Puck. I'll be over in Belfast.
Oh, nice.
I cover, so for the group over there, I actually cover the teams here for them.
Oh, great.
I write
okay.
about it. So,
oh, that's great.
Went over last year.
Yeah.
But what is your feelings about this momentous opportunity for the team?
Oh, it's so good. I mean, yeah, I think when I've ever tried to build a schedule for my student athletes, I try to do things that are different and memorable for them. Whether it's playing at, you know, talking to Joe about playing at Frozen Fenway, or, you know, we had this game with Penn State at Wells Fargo Arena for 3 or 4 years. Those are the games that the guys are going to really remember, you know, and I think a trip to Belfast to compete in what I've heard is just an amazing tournament, extremely well organized. I think there's so many things. Our guys are taking a class to learn about, you know, the history of
the
Ireland.
Troubles.
The troubles and how far it's come. Mm-hmm. And I think for our guys to be able to have that knowledge going into it, they'll appreciate it even more. So I think there's so many different levels to this trip. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the fun travel, there's the sightseeing, there's learning about the history, getting to go into classrooms with children there, playing some exciting hockey. I mean, it's a great field. With Quinnipiac, St. Lawrence, and UMass, really, really excited. That's kind of the highlight of the at least the first half of the year, if not the whole year. Hopefully, we have more memories in
there
terms of championships.
Before this, though, did your players even know there was hockey in Belfast?
I don't know that any of us really did. You know, until last year, this great idea came up. I was not familiar with all the sports that were being played in Belfast. So I think this is all new to them, and they're learning a lot about everything, so not just hockey, the importance of other sports over there. So it's a pretty cool thing that the professor's actually going to travel with us.
Oh, nice.
He wasn't originally, but he's really into the class right now, and the guys are getting a lot out of it. He's like, you know what? I'm coming too.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that the Belfast fans love their hockey, but they absolutely adore the college kids.
Oh, good.
They love the speed. They love the 110%.
Yeah.
They talk about it all the time throughout the whole, like, months afterwards when I came back. They were still talking about it.
Yeah, so, well, that's nice to hear. I mean, it is a pretty fun level of hockey, you know, to watch. So that's good to hear. I heard, like, all the teams, obviously, as a coach, I'm picking everybody's brain about it, and I want to know everything about the itinerary. I got them to give me their itineraries so I can see what to expect. And they all said that it was extremely organized, well organized. They had a blast, and that the fans were awesome. So we're excited.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
Thanks to Rhonda for that interview. Another team from the four next week. And if you're wondering what that music was when I played it through, it was a song called You Enjoy Myself by the band Fish, who actually came from the University of Vermont. I know I've never heard it before either, but I've tried to link it in. It sounds a bit strange, but just go with it. I'll try to find somebody else for next week. Anyway, the TFAs, the Fan Agenda, in association with Belfast Giants TV. What should we be talking about? Let's have a look. I've sort of looking at the questions myself this week. We'll start off, Davey, I'll go to yourself. One comes from Mike at BRFC1994, and he says, Ben Davies, yay or nay?
Is Ben Davies not signed for somebody today?
Did he sign for somebody today? Have I just thrown that in? There's already been a sign.
I'm not sure, Paddy. I need to check up, but yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Quality player. Yes, you don't turn down quality British players if you can get them and you can afford them.
Says, obviously, Ben Davies not getting a position with the Norfolk Admirals in the ECHL and maybe looking for a place back here, or maybe already found a place, but would Ben Davies be a player you'd like to see in a Giants shirt?
Down the line, at the minute. I don't think it would replace any of the four or five Brits that we have, to be honest.
And he's not playing that well for Spurs either, is he?
Well, as I said, he was the point. He was actually really bad tonight. But Ben Davies would be a good addition to the squad. But then again, you know, you're taking away Matty Toe, you're taking away Boxer, you're taking away Sheds.
Why?
Well, because you've already got extra guys on your roster. You've got we've got the extra import. If you bring somebody else in, I mean, I think we've been playing better with three lines than what we have been four lines. So what's the point bringing an extra player in?
Well, that's true as well, but I think we're under egging then. We're saying that just because they're British, they're not, you know, imports are therefore more talented. If Ben Davies is better than what we have in our roster at the minute, then bring him in.
Again, I just think we've got the players that we have at the minute, from a British perspective, I wouldn't change them.
No, neither would I. I'm saying I would add. If I could afford it and I could find a space for him, I would add.
Well, again, did we not have this challenge but I think the club had the challenge when Matty Toe became available, and they signed him initially for the first couple of weeks, and then they brought him in. They found the money to basically bring him in. So I don't think the money's available at the minute. And if it was, you know, would you be, you know, we've already chatted about the possibility of maybe changing somebody in the lineup at the minute. Would you change anybody on the import side of things and bring in Ben Davies?
No.
Okay, let's move on to another one. Stevie at Belfast Tale sent one the other day saying that he's often wondered, do you think there really is any benefit to pulling the goalkeeper for an extra man? So many empty net goals nationwide leads me to consider otherwise. What if the netminder stayed put, Stevie?
What did you call her, Paddy? Shauna Murdoch?
The Murdoch gambit?
Panic tactics. It's just a statistical small chance of increasing your opportunity of scoring a goal because you're getting an extra man on the ice. If you look at good power plays, can go anything from, say, 18 to 25%. So with an extra man, you know, 25% of the time or 20% of the time, you will score a goal. Obviously, that reduces because of the amount of men on the ice, 6v5 rather than 5v4. And also that reduces slightly again because the other team can have pot shots at your empty net. Granted, they ice the puck if they miss, but they get free shots at an empty net. So you're maybe only increasing your chance by 2-3% or something, but it's just at that, you know, regulation wins our first tiebreaker. You know, it doesn't matter whether you get beat 2-0 or get beat 1-0. You know, you may as well throw everything to the wall and see if something sticks. Just try and get that extra 1-3% chance of scoring a goal late in the game. It's better than not putting the goalie.
Yeah, it's risk reward, isn't it? One more. At We Fill 56 seems to be a TFA staple. Does this team lack something? Does this lack something for the extra to push them over the top in the big games against the top opposition? Says this is something that quite a few people have been saying about competing at that top level. And earlier on, we did speak a little bit about it. But what do we need? What extra little thing do we need to push us past the likes of the Steelers and the Cardiff Devils?
More goals. At the minute, we're just not scoring enough goals. You know, I think that will improve when David Roller comes back, and hopefully that is this weekend. You know, he started off the season, was it 6 goals in 8 games, David? 6 goals in 7 games?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, he's not afraid to basically shoot the puck. That's one thing that, if I'm criticising the Giants at the minute, I'm saying that they're not shooting the puck enough. I think we're trying to walk the bloody thing into a net in cases, and that's just not going our way regarding scoring enough goals. But I just think if we were going to try and add something to it, I would like more goals.
Okay, thanks for all your questions. Keep them coming through the week at AVFTB on Twitter, #TFA. Let's look ahead this weekend, boys, and we start on Saturday with yet another game against the Coventry Blaze. We're playing them a lot. Away at 7 p.m. in the Skydome Elite League competition. 3 wins from the last 10 games for the Blaze, who we've spoke about maybe in a bit of a rut, maybe not the spirit there. Brian Stewart possibly missing. Davey, there's some real problems for Danny Stewart to try to overcome in this game.
Isn't it a frustration that this team came in and beat us in the SSE 2 weeks ago? Because we've watched them, and you know, I don't like rubbishing other teams, other fans' teams, but like Coventry Blaze are awful at the minute. They're lacking structure, they're lacking leadership, they're possibly lacking their goaltender, they're lacking goals. Just something stinks there at the minute, and you know, Danny Stewart is under the pump. He's under pressure, there's no doubt about that, you know, and he's only there a few months. Great guy, had a long career in this country, and I would have expected that tenacious side of him to be, you know, displayed in his team, and I just don't see it.
Says, what do you expect? You were there last time we played them in the Skydome, and you've also, you commentated on the loss the other week and the win the other week. We don't know what we're going to expect from the Blaze, considering how poor they are, as Davey said, but the Giants need to go in there and do a professional job.
They do. And, you know, we went in there 3 weeks ago. It's exactly the same road trip as we had 3 weeks ago, so hopefully we can do exactly the same thing. You know, Coventry from Saturday, Nottingham on Sunday night. You know, if they don't have Brian Stewart, will they bring somebody else in? Will they go with Rennie Maher? You just don't know. You know, the guys will know when they get there for warm-up to see who's playing. And I just think that, for me, the Friday week ago, when they came into Belfast, it looked like our guys had basically said, it's only Coventry. So, you know, we'll go out and we'll save ourselves for next weekend, which wasn't good enough. And they came out and they beat us. So they are capable of picking up wins. We've seen how, you know, players and how they basically support a local or a British netminder that little bit more. And, you know, Rennie Maher he conceded quite a few goals at the weekend. And, you know, that'll certainly not help his confidence. But if he gets the start this weekend, you know, the kid, you know, he's at this level now where he's been here long enough, and maybe he just wasn't getting that support against the Sheffield Steelers last weekend. But it's one of the things, Paddy, you just mentioned, you've got to be professional. That's the most important thing. Saturday, forget about Sunday. Sunday's, you know, years away. Saturday's the most important game. It's the next one up, and we've got to go out there and be professional and pick up the 3 points.
I'll bow now to the Mr. Statistics here, Mr. McGimsey, a bit of a landmark game for the Belfast Giants.
Well, Sunday night was, but yes, this will be the 501st away game in domestic competition for the club. So, I hadn't updated Sunday's game when I was talking to you earlier on. So, Sunday away in Cardiff Pass there was our 500th domestic away game in all competitions. So, just another little statistic milestone that I like to put out there.
Oh, well, there you go. The 501st away game for the Belfast Giants. 7 p.m. at the Sky Dome. If you're not there, you can follow it on Blaze TV, the coverage with Ed and Stu. Always worth going in, the guys at Clean Cut Sport. Pete Ballinger likes to do a fantastic production. 7 p.m. at the Sky Dome. And then we travel from the West Midlands to the East Midlands and into the Bear Pit to take on the Nottingham Bears. Elite League competition. They are 6-4 from their last 10 domestic games. I've left out the European games where they scored 3 million goals. That game's at 4 p.m. Of course, of the 6-4, there were two games last weekend where they lost 4-2 to the Capitals and 5-2 to the Clans. They're going to be stinging from those two games. Obviously, they play the Storm away on Saturday night before coming back to the NIC to face us. But I don't know what they expect from this Panthers. Sorry, this Nottingham Bears side.
You know, write them off at your peril. Panthers are, well, the Bears are a good side. You know, they've got some really good players. They've got good goaltending. They're solid, usually, on the D. You know, so Saturday for me again is the most important part, but Sunday I just think again we've got to play exactly the way we played 3 weeks ago. I think it was Aaron Lord from the Cats Whiskers basically said that, you know, that it was a brutal game. I actually really enjoyed it. Yeah. And that's because we went in there and we stopped the Nottingham Panthers playing. So, it's the first time facing the Nottingham Bears, and I think that if we can go out there and, put a performance in like we did the last time, we've got every chance of picking up 2 points.
Of course, it's the 5th of November on Saturday, and Bears defenseman Andy Sertich was on their website saying expect fireworks on Sunday night, Davey.
As Sid says there, we have to play a no fireworks, no frills game. Play the same way we played when we went there a couple of times last season and the first time visit this season. When we structure, when we stay on the page that Derek Walser prints out for the guys and says, this is our structure, this is our system, stick to it, 5-on-5, heck, we are good at it. When people get away from that, when people start to play their own game rather than a team game, which happened twice at the weekend, Saturday and Sunday night, at times we got away from our system, and that's when the other teams caused us problems. When we stick to our structure, we are a really good team, and we showed it in Nottingham the other week, how to compete and how to win in the NIC. Take your chances when they come along and be defensively solid. And you need your goaltender to stand on his head, which Stephen Murphy did when the Heat came on top in that third period. He pulled us out of the fire. So, you know, with Simon has said, the most important game that we have this weekend is the first one, is Saturday night. Get that out of the way, then we can look at Sunday. But, you know, there's nothing to fear going into the Bear Pit. So, you know, for me, stick to our game plan, stick to our structure, and it'll be okay.
That game is at 4 p.m. on Sunday. Of course, there's no webcast. And apparently for Nottingham games, there'll be no webcast from Sheffield either. But that's another thing. Maybe we'll talk about that next week. But yeah, no webcast. Keep an eye at AVFTB on Twitter for updates, or we'll point you in the direction of updates for that game. Unless there's any other business. Gents, nothing?
Nope, not for me.
Nope.
Nothing for me, Patrick.
All right then. Well, listen, I'll say thanks to Mike Quinnell, to Rhonda McClure for the interview earlier in the Friendship 4, to Neil Russell, and of course to you two gents, Davey and Simon. Keep an eye on at AVFTB. Get over there for the Player of the Month award. Cast your vote amongst those four lads, and that result will come out on Friday. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey, and we'll catch you here next time. On a view from the bridge.